But now it's time to head to the University of Technology Sydney for this UTS Speaks forum, Eating the Earth: How Should We Eat to Ensure a Sustainable Future? Introducing the discussion, Professor Stuart White, Director of the Institute for Sustainable Futures at the UTS.
I guess one of the questions is, why should we all be interested in food, diet and sustainability? And I think, for myself, I think there are probably three reasons, which I'm going to talk about in turn. The first one is a topic which Rosemary and Dana will address in large measure, which is the fact that food and diet are extremely important in terms of the impacts and the inputs in global sustainability terms. And Rosemary will be talking about elaborating on this in terms of food choices, in terms of principles, and in terms of guidance for consumers in dealing with this issue. And in a lot of our work, we find that the study of systems is important, and you cannot get a better example for the study of systems than is provided by food, diet, and sustainability. Because the study of systems asks where things come from and where things go to, and I think that's part of the problem with our community response to food, is that we're not actually aware of where it comes from, and we're also not aware of where it goes to, but that's the subject of other UTS Speaks. Whenever we, if you go online and you look at any of the ecological footprint calculators, you look at greenhouse calculators, then you will see, in those calculators which do include diet, you'll see what a major impact it has on greenhouse emissions and ecological footprint. It's very clear that eating further down the food chain is an extremely important contributor to global sustainability. For example, I mean, it takes approximately, give or take, 5 kilograms of cereals to produce 1 kilogram of meat. Managed grazing lands now occupy 25% of the global land surface area, and 34% of cropland is used to feed livestock. These are significant and dynamic figures. They do make a big difference in terms of global sustainability. And the study of systems tells us something else. It tells us something, well, in fact, thermodynamics tells us, that what is consumed must go somewhere. If we don't excrete it, it stays in our bodies. And so we face another problem, which is that in recent figures suggest that nearly 20% of Australians are obese and nearly 50% overweight, according to the usual definitions. And Access Economics have estimated that this cost us, in health terms, $21 billion a year in terms of dealing with the impact of that overnourishment, if we can call it that. And there is an irony that a recent FAO report looked at the question of obesity in developing countries, and there is a serious emerging issue, a two-edged sword, if you like, of countries in which there is both significant undernourishment and significant overnourishment. So there is a significant incidence of obesity in developing countries, and indeed meat consumption has doubled in the last 15 years in China, and it's up 70% in Brazil. And Dana will provide a specific and quite powerful example of the global implications in this particular instance of some of the research that's being done on phosphorus use and the local implications of that for diet. So I think that this is the first reason why I think it's important to be interested in this topic, is because of the impacts and inputs of food and diet. The second one is that food, diet is so representative of sustainability issues. It links so many issues and dimensions together. We do a lot of work in other topics, such as energy cycle, the greenhouse impacts, and water, and so on. But there's nothing quite like this topic to bring all of that home to people. I mean, I guess it's something about the fact that we are eating food at least 3 times a day. I mean, water does, to some extent, have the same evocative influence on people's perception as a sustainability issue, but energy is rather too more abstract, and it's hard to get the same focus. But I think with food, we have a real opportunity to involve the community in discussions about sustainability and about global issues, which I think is something that we need to seize. From a systems perspective, as I say, ecology and in Buddhism, even everything is connected to everything else. So it's not just about the embodied water in food. It's not just about the embodied energy, which of course has greenhouse implications, or the embodied oil. There's been some quite recent study about impacts of oil security and the oil content of food, in the sense of how much oil is required to produce food, or indeed phosphorus, which Dana will talk about. It's also about the embodied injustice. Trade injustice is one of the key issues associated with with our food system, and the embodied cruelty in terms of factory farming. And we have seen a massive process of industrialisation and intensification of agriculture. In 2002, 1% of the pork producers in Australia held nearly half of all the sows. So we're seeing a massive intensification and a huge reduction in the number of holdings. There are over 400 million chickens killed for meat in Australia each year, twice the population of Sydney each week, 95% of them in factory farms. And these, as with all systems, these systems have outputs. In fact, it's not often recognised, pigs produce four times the amount of faeces and urine than do humans. And, I mean, in terms of the impact in phosphorus output, and as I say, Dana will address this in her presentation, this is quite a serious issue. Often arguments are used about efficiency. Industrialisation of agriculture improves the efficiency, and that's necessary because we need that food. But it's clear, not just from some of the other things that I've suggested in terms of eating up the food chain and the losses associated in that system, but it's also the fact that 50% of our food is actually lost from the farm to the fork, regardless of where it occurs in the food chain. So there is so much inefficiency in the system, either systemic inefficiency or actual inefficiency, that arguments about or in favour of industrialisation because we actually need the food, otherwise we'll starve, are actually, these points are not valid. The issue around terms of trade, I think, is one that is perhaps not, doesn't feature in terms of the food, diet and sustainability debate in the way that it should. And it's worth remembering that the developed world, the rich world, developed their agricultural systems behind massive walls of protection. So they were able to develop with that protection, and yet all of the global public policy rhetoric is now about developing countries actually having to strip away those layers of protection, and we've seen some quite perverse outcomes of that. And even from Australia, which has at least globally a rhetoric of being opposed to protection, is actually quite protective of some of its agricultural industries. And for example, we export $100 million worth of rice to Papua New Guinea, and we've been involved even in East Timor with actually helping to put in place policies which have reduced the ability of the East Timorese to develop an indigenous rice industry. So there's elements of, well, both elements of hypocrisy, but also elements of importance of allowing the developing world to have fair terms of trade for their agricultural produce, and that's quite a significant problem. And overlaid over the top of this, of course, is the global food crisis, which has been somewhat pushed off the front page by the other GFC, the global financial crisis, regrettably, but it's still there, even though it's not on the front pages. And Robert Zoellick from the World Bank points out that the food crisis added another 100 million people to the ranks of poverty, nearly 1 billion people now suffering from lack of nourishment. And one of the concerns that's being expressed by some of the aid organisations is that the high-level event in Rome, which promised $16 billion worth of funding to solve this problem or to address this problem, is now under threat because of the other GFC. So that's something that now needs to be looked at fairly carefully. The third reason why I think it's extremely important that we link these issues, food, diet and sustainability, is that these issues are ones that are quite amenable, more amenable than almost any other sustainability issue, to personal, individual choice and behaviour. We do a lot of work in, as I say, in areas of energy, water, transport, where there is certainly an impact that can be made by individuals making deliberate choices in their lives, but in many cases there are structural barriers which need the influence of public policy to change them in order for people to be able to adopt more sustainable household practices. And food has some aspects of this. It's certainly true that there are structural barriers to that, but given the choices that are available to individual consumers and householders now, it is much more possible for individuals to make a difference with their purchasing power, with their deliberate choices each day. And many more people are actually making those choices, thinking about what they're looking at labels, asking awkward questions. Just as an example, there's over £400 million in fair trade products sold in the UK, and that's growing significantly. Apparently, one in five coffees that are served are fair trade coffees. There is an increasing consciousness of these issues, and then, of course, you look at the whole range of other aspects of food, that some of which Rosemary will talk about, where people are making deliberate choices and asking those awkward questions. More people are having these aha transformational moments associated with food and what they're eating, and in some cases motivated by different types of awareness, whether it's the developing country issues or health issues or animal cruelty. There's often some stimulus that pushes people to move beyond self-interest and push their ethical boundaries. So I think the issue is now is one that illustrates not only systems thinking and the potential for future visioning, but it's also one that is probably best summarised by that adage of think globally, act locally. And I think the following two speakers, who will talk about these issues, will reinforce this notion.